Hi everyone, and welcome back to the Best of Latina podcast after a little summer break. I'm really happy to be back and recording, and we're going to start the podcast off with a guest on the show. I've invited Linda, and we're going to talk about how eating disorders don't always have a look, and Linda goes to med school, so she has a lot of insight into eating disorders and how they're taught and viewed there, so it's going to be a really interesting episode, but I'm going to let you, Linda, introduce yourself to our listeners in your own words. So what would you like to tell our listeners about you?
So first of all, hi, and thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm really excited to be the first guest as well. I didn't know that I was going to be that, so that's cool. And yeah, shout out to Emma, who's our mutual friend, who told me about your podcast, and I listened to it and I just really loved it. I related to a lot of the stuff, and that's kind of how we got talking. And yeah, like you said, I'm a medical student, so I'm in my final year, and that means I'll be a doctor in like less than 6 months, kind of, which is really scary, but also exciting. And I'm super interested in holistic health, so kind of looking beyond drugs and surgery and things, other things that are important to health, but that maybe aren't really usually the focus. And as part of that, I'm into lifestyle medicine and nutrition, but very strongly anti-diet and pro-intuitive eating and mindfulness and all of that stuff. And yeah, in general, I also like to cook and eat vegan food, and I like to dance, I like to be creative. And as part of that, I have like a foodstagram, and then I kind of branched out into talking more about sciencey stuff. So I got my podcast, which yeah, I can mention later, but Bettina's also going to be a guest on that eventually, which is really exciting. And I'm super interested in, or passionate about, I suppose, raising awareness about eating disorders and talking about body image and how they present and how to prevent them and managing them and so on. And in my third year of medical school, I did something called an intercalated degree. And that's basically when you take a year out of medicine and do something else. And I did English literature for that year with kind of a bit of a medical focus. And my dissertation was on kind of interpreting female eating disorders. And I went and looked up the title because I always forget it, but I wrote it down so I could say it because it's quite catchy. So it's She Starves or Devours in Her Hunger for Power, Women's Eating Disorders in Relation to Patriarchy's Construction of Femininity. So I feel like that kind of says something about who I am as a person as well. But I read a lot of feminist literature and kind of applied it to different fiction works and also non-fiction, and I covered anorexia, bulimia and binge eating disorders and kind of common themes about body image and so on. So yeah, I'm super passionate about all of that stuff, as well as many other things, but I suppose that's kind of why I'm on this show. And just out of that as well, I'm not a qualified medical professional, and any opinions here are my own. So yeah, please don't take any of this as medical advice. And I'm just speaking from my own experience, and I can't be taken as speaking for all medical students and all medical education, if that makes sense.
Welcome again. Thank you so much for coming. That's a really good intro. You said you had listened to my podcast, and that's, yeah, how we started talking. Thank you, Emma, for making the introduction. But what was it about the podcast that kind of raised your interest, or what is it about eating disorders that interests you, or do you have any experiences with it in your own background, or have you seen it around you, or where does this passion come from?
Yeah, sure. So I'm always like a little bit vague about this because I do talk about this on my Instagram, but I don't like always fully disclose everything because I think it's quite a personal thing, and that I really admire people that do share their stories because I think it's super helpful. And even like the small bits I've shared, I've had people message me and say that they relate and they're grateful, and I really appreciate that, and that makes me want to continue. And then I think there's always like a bit of shame and competition involved, even kind of ranking which eating disorder is the best and who's the best at eating disorders, which is like super harmful, and you know, that's not a good thing. And then I also don't really want to accidentally like inspire someone or trigger someone to do the stuff that I was doing, so that's why I'm like always a bit vague about it. And then I also think it's sadly super super common to struggle with disordered eating in some way, even if you don't have like a formal diagnosis. And I see it, you know, all the time. And just being more aware of it as well, you'll notice how people talk about, you know, having to earn their food or like being bad with food or binging. They'll say like, you know, I binged on like so much chocolate and crisps or whatever. And it's just so ingrained in the language. And I think that all of the culture contributes massively to kind of people's vulnerability. Like, I definitely think that there are individual cases and individual triggers and so on. There's no doubt about that. But I think culture massively contributes to it. So I suppose that's why I'm interested, because I think that if we didn't have this diet culture, then hopefully we wouldn't really have as many people suffering from eating disorders. And I don't know if you saw this, but there was this Instagram post that was kind of circulating that was saying something along the lines of eating disorders are the most like socially and culturally accepted and praised ways of self-harm. I don't know if you saw that, but basically that was just like, that hit hard. I was like, oh my God, that's so true, because we just talk differently about eating disorders or disordered eating habits. They're kind of spoken about differently until it kind of goes quote unquote too far. But definitely for me, I feel like I've always kind of struggled a bit. I can't really remember a time where I didn't struggle in some way with kind of my body or body image and kind of comparing myself to people around me. And I think just growing up as well, there's like what I typically call like locker room talk, with like where girls compare like body parts that they don't like, and like all of that talk that I'm sure that's kind of a universal experience growing up. And I remember you said when you were talking about your story as well, kind of puberty being kind of a hard and strange time where your body starts to change. And so I've had, without going into too much detail, I've had like issues with my eating and exercise habits. And I've also had quite bad encounters with healthcare professionals. I've had some good ones too, but yeah, I suppose we'll go on to talk as well about how eating disorders don't really have a look, because I think that no one would ever have been able to tell that I wasn't doing well just from looking at me. If anything, like now people might think that I'm doing worse compared to when I was slimmer and everyone was kind of praising weight loss and so on, but I was not in a good place. And I was put on a diet by a doctor as well. And everyone was kind of telling me that, you know, they were admiring me. And then when I hated that, because initially I felt like good, but then just like being deprived is not fun, as you'll know, and you feel like angry and unhappy, and it's like everything you can think of, and you're really ashamed as well, because like when you like quote unquote slip up, you feel really bad about it because you can't tell people because they think that you're this amazing, perfect, super healthy human, so you don't want to talk about like when you binge or when you do stuff that's not good. So for me, I struggled quite a lot, I think throughout my life, just to varying degrees, and I didn't really always have like a label to it, and I didn't really always know what was going on as well. But eventually for me, kind of a turning point was when I was just so fed up with this diet. It was a low carb diet, by the way, and I'm so against low carb diets as well, that my doctor kind of put me on, because it was just not sustainable and I was really unhappy. My doctor was kind of like, oh yeah, well, you know, you can have some chocolate if you want. But it was just like, I was like, you don't get it, do you?
Whoa.
Yeah.
What country was this in, by the way?
So this was back home in Luxembourg. Because I ended up telling her after, I think I'd been on this low carb diet for like a good while, like several months, not quite a year, but almost. And, you know, I'd made lots of progress in her eyes in terms of just being like quite like physically fit. But mentally, I was just not doing well. And it's something that I don't really speak about because it's kind of embarrassing, like I said, or it shouldn't be embarrassing, but it feels embarrassing, or it feels shameful, because it's quite intimate. But at the same time, eating takes place like in public too. And so I basically told the doctor, I was like, I can't do this. I think that there's something like going on with me. And I always just crave, I just want to eat like sweet stuff all the time and stuff. And then that's when she was kind of like, oh, well, you can have like a square of dark chocolate each day or something, which was just like not what I was needing. And I ended up doing some research, and I went plant-based shortly after, which was like one of the best things I could have done at the time, I think, because it was all about eating lots of like potatoes and fruits. And like I was afraid of some, like I was so afraid of potatoes, like even, oh, like some fruits and vegetables with like higher like carbohydrate content. I was like terrified because I knew how many grams was in each of them and so on. So that was like really just a good move for me, I think, to go plant-based at the time. But then after a while, again, I kind of had some underlying issues anyway, and they kind of crept back, and that led to me go, and I think I spoke to a GP. I can't quite remember kind of how I first went about it, but I was kind of like, yeah, I'm still struggling, hello. And she was really nice, and that was here in Scotland. And she kind of went through this screening questionnaire with me. I think it's called SCOF, and it's kind of like, I don't know, a screening for eating disorders. And then she kind of told me about my options for help, and they were not very good, because most of it was kind of, I think there were some self-help resources, but in terms of being referred onwards for like psychological support and so on, I think that it was, I can't remember if either it would have taken ages or if it just wasn't available to me because I just wasn't underweight and not like outwardly visibly struggling. And I was super lucky though too. I'm always very grateful for the support of my parents, who probably will be listening, so hello. And they're very supportive, it's cute.
Aww.
And I was able to get help from like alternative ways, and yeah, that's been super super important for me. And now I think that even though I'm doing better mentally, I've been kind of met with attitudes that have made me feel like, or like kind of shaming or about my weight, which is really, really hard because I don't want to be told that I need to lose weight or anything like that, because I know in myself that I'm, you know, I'm like a healthy young woman in many ways, but unfortunately the focus is often on weight. So it's, diet culture is all around, and it's really hard to kind of withstand that. And I feel so, so much for anyone that messages me or talks about this stuff. And yeah, that's like a very long way of saying that I guess that's why I'm really passionate about it, because if we can talk about these things and people can kind of realize earlier on what's going on and where to seek help and how to get better, and knowing that they are like their suffering is valid, I think that there's a lot of kind of thinking that if you're not like severely malnourished and underweight, then you shouldn't seek help or you don't deserve help, which is totally not the case.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. It's so much more than what you can kind of see from the outside.
Mm. Yeah, and that's kind of almost, I don't think we should be comparing like, oh, who has the best or worst eating disorder and so on. But in some ways, it's quite dangerous if you don't look at all like you're unwell and you can hide it. And part of the eating disorder, there's something with going on with your brain, which is why it's classed as a mental illness, I suppose. And that's why we study it in psychiatry. But when you have an eating disorder, you don't, like you do and you don't want to get better. I don't know if you can relate to that, but like you're tired of it because you don't want to be living like this, but at the same time you also don't. It's really scary, the thought of recovering and of not doing all of those things, so it's really hard to seek help in the first place. And then if you're kind of told that, like, you know, it's not too bad. I remember in your podcast as well, you said that you had an encounter with a healthcare professional that was kind of saying like, yeah, you're not, like, you're still normal or healthy or something when you were like not doing well. And yeah, that's kind of also my worry and why I want to talk about these things.
Yeah, no, definitely. I remember that encounter. And I was just thinking about bringing it up as a good example, because I was already very, very unwell at that stage. But when the doctor said that, you know, there's nothing wrong, nothing to worry about, because my mind was already very, very ill with the eating disorder, and the anorexia was so loud, it was just like giving fuel to the anorexia, and like pretty much saying to me, like, it felt like the doctor was directly telling my anorexia or my anorectic side that you're not anorexic enough. So, you know, it's kind of like what you were saying, that you shouldn't compare whose eating disorder is better or worse, because I think that's exactly what people with eating disorders tend to do, is comparing, or it's the eating disorder side in you that easily compares, like, oh, but I'm not sick enough, or I'm not, you know, whatever it is, maybe thin enough, or, you know, who eats less, who eats more, and all these different comparisons.
Yeah, no, and that's quite interesting because I came across that when I was writing my dissertation as well, that there is kind of a ranking in terms of like what the different eating disorders symbol, what they symbolize. And there is like kind of a ranking among eating disorder sufferers, but also kind of in the theory when they're talking about it, kind of the language that's used around them and so on, which is quite concerning. And yeah, also on that point, like kind of feeling like you're not sick enough as well. I know that for me, when I kind of was told at one point as well, when I was being assessed, there was someone that told me, like a healthcare professional, that yeah, like, you know, like you have these signs going on, which sounds a bit like that, but you don't do this, and you're not like this weight, and you're not this and that, so you know, you're like, it's not too bad, you don't fit this label or whatever. And I was just in such a like disordered state of mind that I was like, okay, so I'm not sick enough, so in order to like make this end, I need to get sick enough. So I kind of went away and tried to get sicker, which is like, honestly, it's like really weird to say that out loud, but that's kind of what I did. And that's why I think that diagnostic criteria, I get why we need to have them, but that they shouldn't be like adhered to so rigidly.
Yeah. What about in medical school? How have you been taught about eating disorders there? If you think about it kind of objectively and putting all your own experiences aside, mm-hmm. how is it taught there? Or yeah.
Yeah, so I was thinking about this ahead of us recording, and it's actually really hard to try and be objective about it. So first of all, each medical school differs in their teaching, and even like kind of within, I can't even speak for the teaching at my medical school, because I mean, I will, but there's a lot of self-directed learning. So we kind of have some lectures that everyone has, but there's a lot of kind of, they will recommend some books, and we kind of have to go away and make of that what we will ourselves. And I was talking to a friend as well, kind of being like, you know, help me out here, what did we objectively kind of learn? Because obviously, because I am interested, I definitely made sure to learn and like look into it a bit more than maybe the average person would have. And yeah, I do think that we, like, in terms of what the entire year got, there was like one lecture at the start, which was kind of okay. I think they did mention kind of how like men can have eating disorders too, for example. And I was like, okay, well, you know, that's a good thing to mention. But we also had these during psychiatry, every 2 weeks, we would have kind of whole class teaching days where they would kind of teach us on different topics like alcoholism and like depression, dementia. And we didn't have eating disorders, as far as I can remember, as a topic on one of those days, even though it was like a topic that we were supposed to learn, but it wasn't like the highlight of any day. And yeah, I just think that probably because people want to pass exams, they will have learned kind of the basics. And if they followed the book, there was like a chapter in eating disorders talking about it. But I think that, yeah, it's quite focused on kind of how to diagnose it and the criteria. And it's the main, like, we covered anorexia and also a bit of bulimia. But there wasn't really any appreciation for stuff like, I don't know, like orthorexia or binge eating. Or I don't know if they mentioned the largest category, which used to be called EDNOS, so eating disorder not otherwise specified, which is now called OSFED. Other specified feeding or eating disorder, and these are all just diagnostic labels, but the biggest kind of group is people that don't fit like one of the labels of anorexia or bulimia but still have kind of issues or binge eating disorder. So I think that the main focus was really kind of on anorexia and bulimia, because those are the most kind of fatal ones in terms of, you know, like risk of dying. And yeah, I'm not sure, like, unless you looked, like, because I remember learning that anorexia is the like mental disorder with the highest mortality of like everything, like schizophrenia and like of any mental disorder, which I found really shocking when I learned that. And I don't know if, like, I know that was kind of mentioned, but I'm not sure how many people actually kind of realized that and took that to heart. So yeah, I think that it definitely leaves, unless you're interested and look more into it, I think that is, like, most people would kind of still be looking for the stereotypical kind of person fitting the criteria and maybe not be as sensitive to picking up on like more subtle cues, and maybe they'd also be less inclined to think that something was serious because we're kind of talking more about like physical signs and meeting those symptoms, as opposed to realizing like the impact it has on someone's life, and just like kind of someone seeking help should already be kind of raising flags for you.
Yeah, no, it's freaky how you also said about the statistics and how anorexia has one of the highest mortality rates. And then still, I was just, when I was listening to you, I was kind of, I noted down in my own questions I wanted to ask you. So like, what is the minimum that you have to learn about eating disorders in med school? Or is it possible to like completely maybe like skip the courses that include eating disorders, or do you have to study it at least a little bit? And maybe what's the kind of like maximum that you can study it in medical school? And I know you can only speak from or based on your own medical school, but if you use your own experiences.
Sure. Yeah. So eating disorders are part of kind of the psychiatry module or block that we do. And so it's not really like, we don't really have courses as such, but we have to cover like everything in medicine. And so eating disorders would be part of psychiatry. And they're like, you need to prepare because there might be exam questions and you kind of need to know. So most people would probably kind of know a bit about it, at least learn the diagnostic criteria, maybe kind of treatment recommendations, and how to diagnose it based on like physical signs, like low heart rates and like signs of vomiting, like people might have calluses in their knuckles and like things like that. So most people would definitely at least kind of know a bit about it. Although I was kind of surprised to be in tutorials where people kind of, where the tutor would be like, you know, so like, what are some signs? And I was just kind of sat there being like, I could talk about this for ages because I definitely know. So yeah, there, like, you can kind of choose, I suppose, how much you want to go into it. Like, there definitely is like a minimum. But having said that, if you really don't care at all, I'm sure you could kind of skip it and gloss over it quite a lot and just kind of take the hit. And if there are exam questions, and just be like, I don't really know, I'm going to guess.
Whoa, that's so scary.
Yeah, I don't know if that answers your question, but like, you can kind of choose kind of how much effort you put into studying different subjects. And typically you'd study more kind of what is more likely to come up. And yeah, I think that most people definitely do kind of know a bit about them, but in depth, I'm not too sure. And then there's kind of, we're kind of training to be like generalists. So obviously like most people wouldn't really end up knowing or like being actually treating the eating disorders, but so maybe you could argue that like as long as they know a bit and can kind of pick up on finer signs. But then when you think of most people not presenting like the stereotypical way, I don't know. Yeah, I just don't think it's quite enough. And I just think at least we should have someone stand in a lecture theater with like a megaphone and be like, this is really serious, people can die, like pay attention. But we didn't have that, sadly.
Yeah, and I think it's important that people that have experiences with eating disorders, and like you've also said, there are so many, and not everyone has to speak about it. It's completely also fine if it's too intimate and a bit too personal, but the people that kind of want to do so, I really think it's so important to hear from the people that have actually gone through it, because no disorder story will be the same. And I would argue that no eating disorder story will also be like by the books, like none.
No, I think it would have been really useful to maybe have someone come in and speak to us, because we've had that for some people. And like on my placement, we got to go to the like specialist eating disorder center, but we just had a tutorial there, like speaking to a psychiatrist. We didn't actually get to like see patients or anything, which like I understand is quite like obviously sensitive. But I think it would have been good to like just for people that don't realize, that don't haven't suffered themselves or don't know someone that suffered, to just kind of see the impact of it and speak to a patient or speak to someone that's recovered, because I think that those patient stories are just so important.
Yeah, if we go back a little bit to when you were talking about weight stigma and the diet culture, how do you deal with, you know, bad messages on social media or kind of, you know, negative talk about all this dieting and just portraying an unrealistic picture of bodies and, you know, all the kind of toxic stuff? How do you manage it now, and how do you deal with it, or how are you able to kind of just let it go in one ear and out the other?
Yeah, so I mean, I would say that it definitely doesn't go in one ear and out the other, because I still definitely process it and I need to very consciously be like, hold up, like, you know, don't get sucked in here, because it's very tempting. And I think that one of the main things that's really helped me is kind of learning about the science behind stuff as well. Why eating disorders or drastic weight loss measures aren't sustainable and they don't work in the long term and they're detrimental to health. So kind of knowing that helps me as well, being like, there's no point in trying to lose lots of weight because you will just damage your body and gain back more. And I kind of try to share that message as well, because sometimes someone, like, that might be the only thing that's stopping someone from, like, relapsing into bulimia or anorexia, just knowing maybe that it won't work anyway, and thinking, like, you know, have you ever been happy at any, like, your lowest point? Were you content? Like, or did you just want to lose a bit more weight? And usually, no, like, usually there will never be, like, a point where, which is enough. So I think that it's just about, well, just is wrong because it's like, it's a big thing, but I think it's about working on acceptance and knowing that it's just not the answer and it's not sustainable. And I think in terms of social media, also trying to tailor your feed so that it's better for your mental health in general, like not following people that I know I find triggering or that I get annoyed by when they post like stuff that is just not, you know, accurate, or too much fitspo and stuff like that. But yeah, I think and like following like good accounts, like people of different body sizes, and intuitive eating dietitians and so on, I find quite helpful. And yeah, that's, I suppose that's like another thing, because sure, that's all present in social media, but I find that that's also present in a lot of medical education, because medical education and medicine is very pro diet culture as well, which I find so frustrating. And I do not want to become a doctor that tells people to lose weight as like kind of a sole purpose or focus of managing their health, because that really bothers me as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's really important that you bring that up. Do you think there are any ways that we could kind of use, or how could you prevent eating disorders from, you know, developing in the first place?
Yeah, so like there's one part which is I suppose that there needs to be a massive cultural shift, which is sort of happening very, very slowly, a paradigm shift in terms of how health is viewed. But then even though there's, you know, there is the rise of the body positivity movement and all of that stuff, which has been happening for a long time. And yeah, also that was started by like fat black body positivity activists as well. And it's not new, but it's kind of gaining recent mainstream attention, which is a good thing. But then I feel like you still have this massive backlash as well with all of these new diets that are being spoken about, all these bodybuilders. So I don't really know. It feels a bit like progress, but I'm not sure if it's truly happening. And then there is research on intuitive eating. There's more of that stuff to prove that, you know, that's the way. But yeah, I don't really know if people are listening to it. But there definitely needs to be a big cultural shift in how we view health. And then on an individual level, I don't know if you could kind of prevent it, but you could definitely be more attentive, I think, to science earlier on, and intervene earlier, because that's, you know, it gets harder the further in someone is. So kind of even, you know, making sure to pick up on science before someone is completely withered away would be a good start, I suppose. And that's why, yeah, I think it's important to talk about the general science and paying attention to if someone kind of is seeking help, or maybe they're seeking help for something else, but maybe ask them a little bit about how they're doing with diet and exercise as well. So yeah, I don't think that it's definitely not easy, but I think that, yeah, cultural like changes and then kind of paying more attention, I suppose, and picking stuff up earlier on would be kind of my main wishes for people to get to take on board.
Yeah. Would you yourself, or would you encourage others to kind of, you know, if you're hanging out with a group of friends, or maybe even hanging out with people that you don't know very well, and you can kind of sense maybe from someone's kind of self-talk or how they talk, or maybe say comments out loud that you might think, you know, maybe they don't feel that like dramatic yet, but you can definitely kind of pick up that they're, yeah, a little bit negative self-talk about your food or your body or something related. Would you already at that stage kind of like raise your voice and kind of, you know, try to intervene already at that stage? Or how would you react in a situation like that? Or would you give any advice to others of how it would be, you know, good to react in a situation like that?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question, but it's also really hard, I think. So in general, I kind of am that person that is a bit annoying in that, like, I think that people kind of take a bit of pleasure and it's kind of a sense of community in doing that thing where everyone's like, oh, I've been such a pig today, I've eaten so much, and everyone else is like, yeah, let's go to the gym tomorrow or something. There's like a sense of community in being like, you know, bashing yourself. And then I'm kind of that boring person that won't join in with that, and I'm like, you know, but like, that happens, like everyone has those days, and like, it all balances out naturally, whatever. And people look at me like, oh, you're telling me what I need to hear but not what I want to hear, you know. So I definitely will kind of say something like that if I feel like it's appropriate, even with people that I don't know very well. But then when you notice like that stuff is happening, like I've had this, because obviously there are so many people that are suffering on some level from disordered eating or exercise habits. So I definitely have kind of noticed that among friends or acquaintances, and it's really, really hard to say stuff, especially if it's someone you're close to, I think. I don't know like what your experiences have been with that, if anything, but like, I think that it's hard because you don't want to comment too much on someone's weight as well, because that might reinforce they'll be happy. You don't want to say like, oh, you've lost so much weight, I'm worried about you, because then they'll just hear you've lost so much weight and be happy about it, you know. I don't know what, like, I've struggled myself to kind of raise this, but I think that it's important to just kind of say that, you know, like, that you've noticed that there may be like being a bit more obsessive about food or exercise, even though, yeah, saying that someone's been obsessive might also kind of be triggering or offensive to them. But I think making them know that you're there. If you yourself have suffered, you could also say something like, oh, like, I used to kind of be a bit like that, you know, like count my calories, track my calories. And I just don't really think that's a good idea, because for me, that kind of led me down this path or so on, and kind of center it on you and say that, you know, you're worried, that you're worried because you're spotting signs that you yourself had. But yeah, just kind of letting them know that you're there as well. And ultimately as well, you can't force someone to recover. They need to want to recover, which is going back to that thing that I said, which is quite hard, because you kind of, people do and don't want to recover. But yeah, I definitely think that if you can and feel comfortable, like, kind of either joke off that kind of negative self-talk, or kind of, you know, say like, you know, yeah, maybe you ate what you feel like is too much, but it will even out. And like, you had, you know, it was a tasty cake, so, you know, let's just not worry about that. Or yeah, just kind of distract or change the topic, or try and maybe pick up on it if you can. Depends very much on the relationships you have. But yeah, I don't know if you have an experience of kind of spotting that in a friend and trying to say something. It's really hard. I've spoken about this with like other friends that have been concerned before, and yeah, I don't really know what, even like then when it gets to treatment, yeah, it's just such a complex thing.
Yeah, no, I agree with you when you say that it's hard, and it is hard. And you know, we have to also remember that we're all human beings, so even if I would really much like to, and I'm sure you would too, we can't, you know, save everyone else, even yeah, though we would really want to, especially I guess based on our own experiences and knowing how, you know, horrible it can be to be in a bad place, mm-hmm, around the eating disorder. But I think already a good step to kind of remember in situations like that is, at least if you don't know maybe how you could challenge that talk, you can at least, you know, not be a part of it. Or I mean, I don't mean, yeah, to sweep it under the rug, but I kind of mean that, you know, don't go along with it and be like, yeah, you're right, you know, tomorrow you have to do this to compensate or whatever, mm-hmm, but kind of at least don't go along with it. That's already a first step, and then maybe next time you can say like a little bit more. And then, you know, if you maybe go home and think about it, like, oh, I wish I would have said this. Or you can even, if you can't say it in that situation, if it really stays with you, you can message them later, or next time you see them, you can, you know, say that, you know, that one time that you said or talked about this about food, and it really got me thinking. And you know, I don't want you to think like that, or kind of finding your way. Or maybe you have, if you don't have experiences from an eating disorder yourself, but you can still kind of pick up that someone is having a bit of negative self-talk around food or exercise, then maybe, you know, you react to it and then you go away with it. And maybe you know someone that you can ask, hey, how could I maybe approach this person? Like, I'm a little bit worried.
Yeah, no, that's a really good kind of first step, like to not go along with it. I like that.
Yeah. It's been so much fun recording a podcast because I haven't done it in so long, and I could just sit here and talk to you for hours and hours, but I'm aware of time. So I think we have to start wrapping it up a little bit.
Sure.
Is there anything that you would like to still kind of bring up that you had not noted down or thought about that I haven't asked you already?
I think we've, like, you know, we've covered most of the stuff. I think that I suppose I just want people to know that, like we said, eating disorders don't necessarily have a look. Pay attention to other signs. It's not always going to be a stereotypically obvious picture. Especially people in larger bodies, still, you know, don't think that, you know, they might just get a lot of discrimination, or they do get a lot of discrimination, and people won't know that they are dieting, restricting, in a cycle of, you know, unhealthy eating, and they'll just kind of look at them and just tell them to lose weight. And like, future medical professionals, like a lot of the, you know, a lot of medical students are just kind of, we won't be specialists, but I think it's still important to just keep all these things in mind, even because, like, you're very likely to have a friend, at least one, probably more, that has struggled with this or is struggling with this. And to anyone that is, like, anyone that is a sufferer and is listening, if you're struggling, and if you're even considering asking for help and thinking, you know, I kind of want help, I don't know if I'm sick enough, if you're even asking yourself that question, you need help and you're worthy of help. And unfortunately, you know, it can be quite hard to actually get help. But if you can't afford to, you know, go through private routes, if you can't wait to be referred through the NHS or so on, there's a lot of self-help stuff as well out there to help you. And you should listen to Bettina's podcast episodes as well.
Oh, well, thank you. Oh, that's a perfect ending to the podcast today. Thank you so, so much for coming, Linda. And
thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for sharing your own experiences and your openness and your vulnerability. I really, really appreciate it. And I'm sure the listeners do too. Do you want to one more time remind everybody where they can find and follow you, your podcast, your Instagram, and all the channels that you want to mention?
Sure. There's at Linda Does Vegan on Instagram, which is kind of a foodstagram, but it's quite chill, low-key, anti-diet, and just some, like, food and thoughts on there. Then there is What I Didn't Learn in Medical School, or WIDLIMS with a W, and yeah, you can find that on, like, all podcast directories, and I post quite a lot on the Instagram account to go with that as well. Which you can just find at WIDLIMS. And my show notes plus other, like, stuff. I do write blog posts as well. I have some stuff about, like, recovery and like mental health as well, as like just random recipes. All of that is on my website, which is lindadoes.com. So Linda, D-O-E-S, .com.
Thank you so much again, Linda, for coming. And yeah, I'll speak to you soon again on your podcast.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, bye.
Bye.